Hi, everybody. This is Dave. I'm sorry, I had trouble getting into my own bridge line. I hope you guys are doing great. I'm really looking forward to our seminar series. Some of you may have signed on late enough to have not received the email from me asking the couple of questions about what is the most important question you want answered during our series of discussion, and if you were to walk away after 4 weeks, after our four sessions, what would you walk away with that would be most important to you? So does anyone want to add or indicate that at this point? I see a number of people who we've had previous collaborations. You guys realize the pressure that puts on me to come up with new stories. But anything you want to add about what you want to be sure we cover in talking about change and transition and the neuroscience of mentor coaching in this discussion? Anything from anyone? I want to keep an open mic for just a few moments so that you can respond. I want to ask you as a coach, what's the most difficult aspect of facilitating change for your client? First thing that comes to mind, you may want to jot it down. So does anybody want to add or just indicate that out loud? For you, what's the most difficult thing, especially about change?
Can you hear me?
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Oh. I was feeling a little lonely there. Go ahead.
That's okay. I tried raising my hand, but I'm on the turbo bridge, but I don't know.
Oh, this is all, landline, telephone. It's not video, so I can't see your hand. But go ahead.
Okay. This is Lucy Ward.
And you have not gotten an email from me because you registered late, but those two questions, I'll be sure that you get that. So go ahead, please. Yeah.
So the most difficult thing about change, if I'm understanding correctly, from a coach perspective or from?
From your perspective as a coach facilitating this work with clients.
I think it's the most difficult is trying to help the client recognize where they are now, what they're feeling now. And even what they want.
Okay.
They just know it's chaos and they're not even sure what they want.
I understand, and that's very common. Yeah, thank you. That's a very succinct. It would have taken me 4 or 5 minutes to say that. That's a very succinct way of saying it. Thank you. Who else? Other thoughts or challenges that you're experiencing that you want to be sure we address?
Hello?
Hi, Dave. It's Ash. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're all fighting for it now.
This is Robin Hayden. One of the things that I find difficult is for people to maintain confidence, especially in times of uncertainty. I just see these cycles of losing confidence.
Okay. here's a way that I don't think it works, and it is a limiting assumption. If someone said, well, I need to get confident before I do it, or I need to really feel comfortable before I start doing that, that's a limiting assumption, because that's not where you began. And this is where structure beats psychology. Whenever you have a system or a plan, you get to a point of comfort and confidence. But that is not a way we begin. Every step, every one of your clients makes that's into a new or slightly different way of doing something will usher in an experience of discomfort, because that's the way our minds and brains work, because they're departing from their default mode. They're breaking the script. So it's going to read as discomfort. So it's important that we, as coaches, help them understand that this is a way of registering change, of doing something new and different. It's an indication, a signpost, of being in new territory, not that something's going wrong. Because the continuous dialectic in our brains, our minds, let's try something new, and our brains says, no, let's get it right. So we continually want to keep doing the default mode. And over 90% of our operating system is unconscious, so we will only see evidence of it in the process of our relationship with our client. But know this, every algorithm that determines every aspect of thinking, feeling, and behaving in your client will manifest in the coaching engagement. And this is where we can help our clients understand how to look at things in a different way. And what many of you will do, and if you think about it in this way, is that whenever we help our clients look at change or any kind of transformative experience, it will be different than any model they've used before, so it's going to be uncomfortable. Here's an example. If you don't have a model of exactly what you want to do, it becomes more difficult. An example, two deaf parents are offered the option of a cochlear implant for their deaf child. 8% choose this option. Two hearing parents are presented the option of a cochlear implant for their deaf child. 92% opt for the surgery. So this is something I think we need to appreciate with our clients. When they go through even minor changes, one step into something new and different and unknown, we need to appreciate how this is uncomfortable and unknown for them as yet. So this is where our collaborative alliance will be so important. So this is why I want to consider with you the dynamics of change and transition to develop an understanding of how the mind and brain working models will be, I think, useful to you. So I want to encourage you, while we're still in open mic, and I want to see if there are any other questions or comments, I encourage you to reflect on the questions and the vignettes in your coaching practice. Send them to me, just in a succinct way, a sentence or two or three, or bring them up at the beginning of our seminar. I'll reserve a bit of time at the beginning for a discussion about things that I think might be useful for all of us to do this. So, and this is addressing what you already know with clients. Even if it isn't working or limiting, we want to stick with the default mode to not break the script, not have to change. And we want others to fit the script that we would have them do. So any experience that's new and different introduces discomfort and trepidation, because it immediately transcends the hardwired default patterns. So this is one of the challenges, but some of the aspects of what we know about how our minds and brains work that can be helpful for us in coaching. So just briefly, anything else anyone wants to add or ask before we before I go on lecture mode and move into our discussion? Okay, well, I'll come back at the end for any clarifications or questions that you have. I am unable to go on lecture mode, so I'm going to ask you to mute yourselves then. I'll check that for next time. So our first seminar, I want to do an overview of the dynamics of change and transition to get an idea just as an overview, as a developmental journey that we take with clients before we later talk about the how-tos and the what do you say after you say hello, but just to consider the whole concept of navigating change and transition to look at the dynamics of both of those. So first, what's your story? When we want someone to know who we are, we share stories of our childhoods, our families, of what's important to us. When we know people well, we know their stories, what's important, what shaped and molded them, the traits and turning points that have tested them. Our own story, as you think about that, is an organizer of our experience, a continuity of where we've been, where we are now, where we'll go. Stories define, orient, and guide us. This is what we're perturbating with our clients, to look at something in a different way, to take even a step of change, is disruptive. It breaks the script. So it's uncomfortable. I think it's important for us to appreciate that and appreciate how we're collaboratively looking together at revising the story for it to be more effective for the client. So first, let's look at the dynamics of change itself. And this is, again, an overview for our first session. We'll look at applications, case illustrations, and that sort of thing in subsequent seminars. The change is the event, the situation. You move to a new city, divorce, retire, have a significant loss, take a new job, lose an old one, retire, or change careers. As we focus on change, we address the rituals of change, the work tools, the strategic goals. So first, the idea of change will create anticipation. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, a kind of uncertainty or trepidation, even anxiety, because this is change. Next, if you continue rather than return to your comfort zone, it's expansion into the new experience to finally, ultimately, experience mastery. Now, a couple of things about change itself may seem paradoxical. Every step forward means relinquishing a past position. So someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally and practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story, even one that doesn't work that well. This is a process. It's a developmental step. It's not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's like saying goodbye to an old friend to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior or a hope of getting the old story just right and that doing it better will make it work. The hardest thing to give up is what might have been, because when you take that final step into the present, you recognize that you'll never get it in the way that you wanted in the past. Now, additionally, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change can be paradoxically an injury to self-esteem. Because this carefully crafted story, even with some aspects of identity attached, is replaced by something better. And that's a kind of tough recognition. Well, I could have been doing this better all along. So here are at least six components in this dynamic of change. This is just a backdrop and, an overview, a conceptual overview for what you're engaging with your client. These are not headlines. You won't see signs that you can label, but these are just for your reflection to think about the internal kind of markers of this. One is the myth that there's a perfect choice. The illusion, and this is all in your outline. I would suggest that you print your outline and the work tools so you don't have to take notes, and you'll see I'll just elaborate. And I'll stick mostly to the outline except for when I get questions or input from each of you who want to suggest something we talk about. I'll depart from that then. The illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems. The disappointment that nothing's perfect. There isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. The scientific term for that is called adulthood. The development, the recognition, no one's going to take care of it for you. The growth to take the next best action. The consolidation, the happy-sad experience resulting. Paradoxically, happy about the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle to move ahead, and sad about mourning giving up an old story. Now, every transition begins with an ending, a change event, and you have to let go of the old before you can begin the new. Every beginning ends something. And Agnes Allen, American writer, said, almost anything is easier to get into than out of. Changing to a better job or career may ironically cause a kind of grief or confusion. It's a sad end to an important relationship in the past, even if it wasn't ideal or even close to it. The reason it's important to recognize this is that some of the feelings you experience today may have nothing to do with the present ending, but come from the resonance with similar situations in the past. Letting go is challenging. It's difficult. Herodotus, a Greek historian in the 5th century BC, said, "Diseases always attack men when they are exposed to change. Even when we look forward to change and anticipate it eagerly, some of us still hold on to what we used to be, and we wonder whether the change was a good or bad idea. We're defined and define ourselves by our roles and relationships, those we like as well as ones we don't. So letting go is a kind of an ambiguous experience. New skills are needed for negotiating this passage, separating the old from the new. Maybe the characteristic ways of dealing with things, coping with endings, needs to be understood. Each person has his own style of ending and new beginning, whatever we're talking about in terms of ending. People tend to respond to endings in their own signature way, to have characteristic reactions to ending and similar mental state and mood. So here are four of the most common styles of ending, just to reflect on. One is abrupt. It's designed to deny the impact and the meaning of change. Just get it over with. Slow and gradual. So that it's tough to see that anything really important is happening. Kind of denial, sort of. An external focus. Some people learn to cultivate a subtle way of covertly inviting people to act on them when they feel changes in the air. So it's as if somebody else initiated this and they're only reacting. Another, active or passive, proactive or reactive. So some people work to establish blamelessness in regard to ending. She just walked out. No warning, no nothing. She just left me. And it's like someone who shouts, "I didn't do it," when the police arrive. calls attention to themselves and makes everybody suspicious. How you approach change comes from the style you've developed for dealing with endings. And I think this is important because you're listening at a number of levels with a client, what their traditional or typical way of dealing with things are, what's working, what's not working. The style is likely to reflect earlier experiences as well as later influences and be consistent over time and situation. Typically, someone repeats a behavior pattern as with other important losses. One person feels the grief and anxiety for the entire group. Another comforts the mourner. Another takes over the routine responsibility. Another assumes control for the situation. Think about a family response where each has their role. Although it's advantageous to understand your own style of endings, a part of you will resist that understanding with passion. The reason I'm speaking to you, is I think it's important for us as coaches to understand our story. And that's important for two reasons. One is the more we understand our story, the more we can facilitate the client's understanding of their own story, and the more likely we are not to superimpose or influence a client with our story, to keep our story to them ourselves and not have it contaminate the working alliance and relationship with the client. Now, even the small endings have their own personality that's consistent with the big endings. Think about how you tend to act at the end of an evening at a friend's house or a night on the town. Do you drag things out by starting new activities and conversations when others seem to be ready to leave? Or suddenly say it was a nice evening and abruptly dash out? Did you say goodbye to everyone or leave ahead of plan so you could avoid the goodbyes? Notice how small and large endings can be the same. Leaving a job or moving from a neighborhood, as well as having dinner with a friend. The person who leaves early and the one who stays late both avoid endings in their own way, as well as the discomfort of the disruption. A dasher and a lingerer share the same dynamic. There are things we don't want to happen, but have to accept. Things we don't want to know, but have to learn. People we can't live without, but have to let go. It's the ending that makes the beginning possible. So this is essentially, in your outline, some basic principles just to think about the process itself, the dynamic of letting go. And how can we facilitate that in a more effective way with our clients? Accept the reality as well as the importance of this subjective loss, the meaning of the loss. Acknowledge the loss openly. Accept and expect overreaction. And overreaction occurs because the emotional impact of the loss is there, as well as past experiences with losses, which any current situation resonates to make it more than just this present moment. Expect and accept the process of grief and the stages of grief, anxiety, bargaining, anxiety, sadness, then disorientation and confusion. They're not always in rank order like that. Compensate for the losses. Ask, what can I give back to balance what's been lost or taken away? Learn as much as possible about the loss in order to benefit from it. Define what's over and what isn't over. Mark the endings. Rather than just talking about the endings, create actions or activities that dramatize them. When Rene McPherson took over the leadership of Dana Corporation, he saw that operations were choked by a culture of rules that nobody could remember. In a management meeting, his first, he piled all the company manuals on a table. They formed a stack almost 2 feet tall. He then pushed them all to the floor and held up a single piece of paper with the corporate principles. He said, "These are our new rules. Treat the past with respect. Take a piece of the old story with you. Endings ensure the continuity of what really matters. And the past, the, quote, good old days, will be idealized at times, denigrated at times. The changes anyone experiences are different than anything they've ever experienced before. The transition process by which people get through change is a system in itself." And I want to talk about this some as we do practical application for clients, because in unprecedented situations, there may be no, by definition, no working model of adaptive things or of usual ways of responding. Since there are no working models, there's nothing to refer to. You've got to make it up on your own. Even using intuition, which unconsciously simulates based on old models, can be misleading. So being aware of that means that you have to look at here and now, this situation, and creating new models for unprecedented experiences. So let's look now, just as an overview, of the dynamics of transition in itself, as we've just looked at change. This is about the difference. Change, the event, it's the snapshot. The change process is the wide-angle lens. The transition is the time-lapse photograph. So the transition is the process, the internal story of change. It's a shift in orientation, even self-definition. Transition is more like an awareness of the seasonal cycles while you attend to the daily weather. As you respond to change and embrace transition, that process means you gradually, ideally, let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve into a new story to transform a new identity, to internalize the changes, to sustain and enhance them, to make that part of a current working model. The transition story provides the coherence that will reassure in the present and also foreshadow the future. The person you were yesterday is the person you are today, and the person you will be tomorrow only more so. A part of the process of change is how we address a future self to incorporate that change. We're going to come back to that. Yet, seemingly paradoxically, old stories need to be mourned to say goodbye to them, and along with them, the self left behind. You also may have your own characteristic way of a new beginning, just as with endings. Change and renewal seems to involve new relationships, but they can also involve new places, new projects. For some, it begins with a new state of mind, a new feeling, self-image, or goal. Sometimes the beginning results from careful and conscious effort. But for many people, new beginnings have a mysterious and sometimes accidental quality. Although we think we take charge of our lives and plan carefully, some of the most important beginnings take place in the unfocused darkness outside our awareness. Here's an example. When you want to distance something, you want to say, you want to begin with many, many years ago. Many, many years ago, a couple of years after my divorce, I was at an author's conference in Austin. I was planning to leave Saturday after the last conference meeting, and I had just enough time to drive to my ranch between Austin and Houston for the sunset. One of the measures of the quality of my life is the number of sunsets I'm at the ranch, on a porch with a cigar and a single malt watching the sunset over the trees and lake. But I decided for some unknown reason to stay for the social hour. It made no sense. It was a wine and cheese event. Nothing compared to a single malt and cigar, never mind the sunset. There I met my future wife. 2 years later, we would marry on that porch I didn't get to that evening for the sunset. At sunset, with her children and mine on that porch, because it was raining, it couldn't be in New York. And that was just a bit over 2 decades ago. Without a transition, change simply rearranges the furniture. People imagine they can prepare for retirement by making specific changes like adequate financial preparations, a place to live, developing new interests. Yet the challenge is the transition, and change only prepares you for the transition. A buddy of mine and I have done some retreats for business owners and CEOs within a year of their retirement called What's Next Exec, to look at what their next career or commitment or contribution will be, because they recognize they're not going to be happy playing golf every day, and they don't know how to deal with an unprecedented situation of that kind of wholesale change. I learned a lot. They learned a lot. The challenge is the transition, and change only prepares you for the transition. People have to let go of the outlived chapters of their life story and find a new one to replace it, or the outlived chapters of a business story to create a new one. And you guys have done this, I would bet, to go into the whole transition process of creating an entire new professional life, to become coaches and practice. At times, rituals and celebrations further this process of transition and can be markers. Every lifetime has its own unique rhythm, and the personal developmental steps for both change and transition deserve attention. Transition, again, is a process. It takes time. No matter how many people you put on the job, it still takes 9 months to have a baby. Now, I know we're still at a very conceptual level. I hope this is helpful as an overview. Remember, we're going to talk about applications and more specific aspects in our later seminars. So here, let's look at three components of transition. And this is just for your awareness to listen and conceptualize with your client in case this as an organizer is helpful to be a catalyst for your clients going through these things. So the three components of transition. First, there's an ending. Then there's a neutral zone. It's an important directionless time. In between, it's filled with mourning, with work, with getting ready. Then, third, you finish with a new beginning. So, let's look first at the ending. Every transition begins with an ending. Even though it sounds backwards, endings always come first, willingly or unwillingly, an ending. So the first task is to let go, which can be a process, whether at the individual or the organizational level, whether the source of transition is an internal change or internal development, the transitions always start with an ending. To start doing things a new way, you have to end the way you're doing them now. The most common mistake is to add a new pattern to the ones already ending. The impact of the transition doesn't necessarily bear a direct relationship to the importance of the change that triggered it. One person can be brought to an abrupt standstill by divorce or job loss. Another person takes it in stride. Someone else may come to terms with a debilitating illness, yet be demolished by the loss of a pet. Here's one dramatic way to mark an ending in a story. And you've heard this, but I want to apply it here. Spanish explorer Hernando Cortes came ashore with his men at Veracruz, and he knew that his men were extremely reluctant about the exploration ahead. They knew the danger. Some had called it hopeless. He was faced with mutiny, and when they were faced with a continent full of unknown adversaries, each person in his party was ambivalent about moving ahead or turning back. Cortes burned the ships. Here are the components of an ending process, in one way of thinking about it. There are basically five aspects of an ending experience. And this doesn't happen in order. It's not important to know, but just to think about it. One is disengagement. Usual events disengage from the context and the identity in which people know themselves. Divorce, death, job change, move, illness. The disengagement itself begins a process of change. Two, dismantling. Old familiar behaviors, habitual processes and practices are taken apart a piece at a time. This gradual transition involves slowly unpacking the lost relationship, including the lost identity. That's part of it. And never forget that part. An ending stops what used to be. It's not the old way anymore, but it's not yet the new way as this dismantling occurs. Three, disidentification. Ending connections with what used to be, you also lose an old way of defining yourself. Old friends you didn't inherit in the divorce. I know these things quite well. Often people describe this phase as not being quite sure who they are. I thought about this loss a good deal when I came to terms with a wholesale early retirement from my practice and teaching of psychiatry and psychoanalysis to become an executive mentor coach. For 25 years of practice and 7 years prior to that of medical school and residency, I identified with being a doctor. I even wondered if using the MD after my name was a way of hanging on to that identity, though I clearly knew I was no longer practicing, nor would I ever return to it. The old identity can potentially stand in the way of transition as well as of transformation and self-renewal. Four, disenchantment. Coexisting with a still vivid picture of the way things are is the split-screen image of the way things were. Disenchantment is the discovery that in some sense, your world is just no longer the way it used to be. Disenchantment is a recurrent experience throughout the lifetime of anyone who has the courage to trust and believe in the first place. Some significant transitions began with disenchantment, the loss of a job, the loss of a relationship. Listen for this possible distinction in your client. The disenchanted person moves on, while the disillusioned person goes through the play again with new actors, always on a perpetual quest for the elusive, not letting go. And finally, disorientation. Disorientation affects a sense of space, place, as well as time. The usual way of structuring time changes. The future's unclear. Now, these elements of ending are not in sequence or any particular order at all. For example, in a divorce, one person may experience disidentification and disorientation and then decide to act, which leads to disengagement. Now, if you're scoring that play, it's 3-5-1. The other partner, unaware of the impending change, begins an ending with disengagement and the challenge of disenchantment becoming oriented. That's 1-4-5. There's no normal or natural order to this sequence, nor any normal order of reactions to an ending. Endings are the first rather than the last act of the play. And notice that only the first, the disengagement, refers exclusively to external things. Dismantling can be either internal or external, but the other three, disidentification, disenchantment, disorientation, are all internal. And it's the internal things that hold us to the past or that we hold to the past with. Yet we often try to deal only with the external issues, to leave the relationship, the job, to move across, to focus on the content. This focus uses change and content to avoid this internal transition. To storm out of a job because the bad boss, rather than discover what it is that keeps you finding and agreeing to work for such bosses, is an example. After someone struggles initially with the change and then begins to grapple with the transition, this is the true work, the beginning of the transformation. Now, the mid-phase of this change and transition process is the neutral zone. People in transition will create new ways to return to the old story. That's simply how our minds and our brains work. Every ending is followed by some distress or confusion. We can expect this as part of transition. Ending, confusion, new beginning. People will resist both the change and the transition. They will return to the familiar. That's how our brains are wired. That's how we're encoding. We can, as coaches, reframe this return to the familiar as perhaps a way of measuring progress to see how far you've come, an opportunity to validate a commitment to move forward. But this in-between time of transition is the real work of letting go and prepares the foundation for the next stage. It's important not to rush through this neutral zone too quickly to avoid or minimize the disruption. This is a very important time for a work in progress. When I went through my career transition, I needed a time in between before I began my new career. I knew I was a medical professional in mind and heart, and I would be tempted to revert to that identity and style of being if I had doubt about my new endeavor, which is why I made a wholesale transition to retire completely from medical practice and close that out in every way, then to spend some time at my ranch writing and physically working before I began training for certification as a professional coach. Now, in another era, the person in transition left the village, went into a forest or desert to remain for a time. Removed from old connections and without old identities, the old reality changed as well. This in-between time of empty space fostered the generation of a new sense of self. And so actually mine was closer to caveman than I realized. When someone doesn't allow this essential period of time, the work of mourning and the transition process, something important is avoided. Often someone, without even quite knowing why, finds ways of being alone and away from usual distractions, because an important work of transition is the internal process. So here are a couple of questions on the meanings of transitions at a particular time in life. One, what is it time to let go of in my life right now? Think about the first thing that comes to mind. That's always the more emotional response. If you think about it and write it down, you've already moved to your left prefrontal cortex. I'll have some more about that at a later point. Transition begins with letting go. An important distinction between change and transition is that change is more content. It's more focused on reaching a goal. Transitions begin with letting go of what no longer fits a life stage you're in. That's why I'm spending time on this, to really look at and understand and think about the process that we're talking about. The transition begins with letting go of something you've assumed or believed, some way you've always seen yourself. Two, what is waiting to make its entrance into my life? The answer is usually something internal, subjective, maybe in the shape of an idea or question you ask yourself. It may feel like a message to you, a message that something is standing just outside the door of everyday awareness, waiting for your attention. We have to deal with endings all our lives, yet curiously, we often handle them poorly. We either take them too seriously by confusing them with finality, or see them as something without sequel, forgetting that they simply are the first phase of the transition process, and we're writing that story. It's a necessary precondition of self-renewal. So at the same time we fail to take them seriously enough because they scare us, we may try to avoid them then. Again, it's not the loss of someone that creates problems, but it's the failure to internalize that person and relationship. Same with anything you give up or say goodbye to. To internalize that. For some, the present consists, at least in part, of a past they've not let go of yet. An illustration of the emptiness of this neutral zone is Leo Tolstoy's description. I felt that something had broken within me on which my life had always rested, that I had nothing left to hold on to, and that morally my life had stopped, and yet I could give no reasonable meaning to any action of my life, and I was surprised that I had not understood this from the beginning. My state of mind was as if some wicked and stupid jest was being played on me by someone. I asked myself, what will be the outcome of what I do today? What shall I do tomorrow? What will be the outcome of my life? Why should I live? Why should I do anything? So this describes the process of letting go to embrace the present in sometimes a categorically and unprecedented way. So here's a summary of some creative uses of the neutral zone. Embrace setbacks. Losses and disadvantages are entry points, or can be, into new solutions. Establish a regular time and place to be alone, to step back, to reflect. Create opportunities for others important in your change to step back and review as well. Accept your need for a time in this neutral zone. Perhaps consider training and techniques of discovery and innovation. You're doing it right now. Engage in experimentation. Try out ideas you may have wished you had the chance to try. Keep a log of neutral zone experiences. Writing it down, talking about it to someone else, this puts it in an output channel. You can retrieve and remember things better when you put them in an output channel. Take this pause in the action of your life, perhaps to write an autobiography. Think, you don't have to publish everything you write. Think of what would be unlived in your life if it ended today. And reflect consciously on the present transition experience in your own life. This neutral zone, the time between the old and the new, can be a rich time for insight. And finally, you finish with a new beginning. A new beginning follows the ending. And the new beginning involves changing how you see yourself, even aspects of your identity. It's when the endings are finished that we can truly begin. The end allows a new beginning, clearer and cleaner. We may not always know when the ending is complete and when we've been in the neutral zone long enough, especially when the path is genuinely a new beginning. For a time, we may not even know what's the real path. Think about the important beginnings in your own past. You bumped into a friend you hadn't seen for years, and he told you about a job at the company that opened up last morning. You met your spouse-to-be at a party you really wouldn't want to go to and almost skipped. You picked up a book that changed your life because it was the only thing lying on the friend's coffee table when you dropped by for an unexpected visit. The lesson in these experiences is that when we are ready to make a new beginning, we will find or create an opportunity. When you're ready to learn, a teacher will appear. There will be a wine and cheese event. New beginnings often occur with an internal realignment rather than an external shift. When we're aligned with our deep longings, when needs and ideals align with purpose, that creates a dynamite process. Each step forward will set off an internal warning system because it's changed. That's the job description of your brain. The error detection mechanism said, this is not right. This is different. You're breaking the script. The brain's error detection mechanism will read that something's wrong, but it's not a signal to retreat in an old way, to an old way of being. Never underestimate the change back pressure from the system. Your family, your company, it's their self-statement of reaction to change, an attempt to restore normal order and not do the work of change. The collective error detection mechanisms given voice. A group or a system has a status quo bias as well as an individual. Jung said, the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. So, an important distinction is this. Have you really moved through the endings in the neutral zone to find the beginning you want to follow? Or is this beginning a way of avoiding an ending and aborting this neutral zone experience? An important question here. One thing you can do is to begin to identify yourself with the final result of the new beginning. What's it going to feel like when you've actually done what you're setting out to do? And as you know from coaching, this is the basic reason that we decide to do what we decide on, because how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. That's our basic motivation. We understandably have ambivalence about new endings. We've not established a comfort zone. There's no grooved default mode for our mind or brain. We don't know the outcome. So beginnings can reactivate some old anxieties, as well as making it very real that the ending has happened. The risk and uncertainty of the new beginning will resonate with past anxiety, probably even trigger old memories, and a new beginning will erode the equilibrium of the neutral zone. For example, one of the most challenging aspects of being an adult and taking care of ourselves is that we have to come to the end of the past, the hope that somebody else is going to do it for us. And, as I mentioned, it's more difficult to let go of what never was than even what was, traumatically so. Can I get a mute on the background noise? Star 6 or the mute button. Because you have, I'll be done in just a minute for discussion. New beginnings need to have a clear idea or purpose. To reinforce a new beginning, you'll have to evolve a new identity that replaces the old one. Because we always return to our identity. And this is where, in coaching, unless you help a client transform how and who they are, any change will just revert back to what they did before. In the beginning, take things step by step. Recognize the assumption and resist the temptation that some other route would go smoothly, with events always exciting and meaningful. It's like comparing yourself with someone else. You're comparing your inside with their outside. That's not an apples-to-apples comparison. This is an important aspect of a new beginning, to shift your purpose from the goal to the process of reaching the goal. For example, the new job may be to find a job. Every transition is a transition from something to something. Each of these transitions corresponds to internal change and the integration, the incorporation of an evolving new identity. So there are many endings, many little beginnings. There are very few times that we actually have direct contact with our future selves. We seldom review our present circumstances as they might appear to a relatively objective future self. When we plan ahead, we specify goals rather than future development of identity or states of mind. This is important as you work with a client to incorporate that ahead, that as well, not just the goals, but how and who they become, what their future self will be, because this is what's in transition. So here are some considerations just in closing to reinforce a new beginning. Be consistent. Shrink the change to ensure stepwise successes. Give attention to evolving a new identity. It may be helpful to generate a symbol of this new identity, a representation that can be a consistent point of reference, and create small successes. In 10 or 20 years, when you look back on present time, laced among experiences will inevitably some envy and regret be part of it. We envy the younger self who could relatively do so much and will regret that younger self did not do more or different or better. We may wonder why we learn too little, love too much, risk too low, or spend too much time in routine and distraction. This view from the future self looking back to the present may be informative. So I want to end with a question and a challenge. Here's the question. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath. Breathe in relaxation. Breathe out any tension. With your eyes still closed, imagine a photograph of you now, 100 years from now. What's the story you most want your great-grandchildren to tell about you? Put that in one sentence. And here's the challenge. Keep your eyes closed. Another deep breath. What if right now is a turning point for you? The time your grandchildren will tell stories about years from now. The time you awakened your deep passion and acted on it. The time you did what you were always meant to do. Or this moment of truth may be a brief awakening silenced by the sensible obstacles you're familiar with constructing. In that case, your grandchildren will have to be content telling stories about your favorite sports team or what great cookies you used to bake. It will all depend on how brave you'll be. So we have far less time than I had hoped. Thoughts or questions or clarifications about anything we talked about? I would suggest for each of you that after each of the four seminars that you write down one thing, even if it's just a sentence, of your most important takeaway from that seminar. It will make it more yours. It will make it more memorable. Many of you have heard me quote this study. The University of Waterloo did a study with a large number of volunteers. They all read the same passage in a book, half read it out loud, half read it silently. They then gave the same test to everyone. The ones who read it out loud did 40% better on the test. They had it in an output channel. It was more attainable, retrievable, and memorable. Anything else? We've got just a minute or two, unfortunately, but anything else you'd like to add or ask or clarify?
Hi. There was one thing that you were saying about the resonance from the past kind of informing the feelings of change now. And you said it twice and I keep missing it. Are you able to repeat that, or do you remember what I'm referring to?
I'm not sure from what you said. It seems like that's what I spent 50 minutes talking about. So I don't know exactly.
No, yeah, there was just something very specific that you were saying about, you know, it was
How close can you come to it?
I think that was it. I might just have to listen to the recording to get it back.
Okay.
There was, yeah, I'll do that.
Fire off an email if there's a clarification or question, and this is to everyone. If you think about something, reflect on it. For those of you who weren't able to attend and listen to the recording, if there's any clarification or question or anything that you'd like me to mention, fire off an email. And if I think it'll benefit our group, I'll bring it to the beginning of our next seminar for discussion. Or if it's really specific, I'll respond to it by email. So I'm interested in your take on this and anything that would be helpful to you to clarify or make this useful. So we're a little bit over time. I want to respect that. If there's anything that comes up before next time, fire an email, and I'll incorporate it at the beginning of our discussion. I look forward to us picking up right here next time. Thanks very, very much. I appreciate it. See you guys.